liberation, full awakening. It's classical when you're doing it. Some of you don't know it. The language is Pali, which they say was one of the main languages the Buddha spoke, and then other
spoke it.
And other people say no, it ain't necessarily so. However, it's close, and so forth. And I still want to know who was there. Can they actually remember?
Yeah.
Other than my suspicions. You just do nice flowers, don't you? Look at this.
Aren't those are cosmos.
It's really just beautiful cosmos. I've never seen one like that.
As haven't I.
As haven't you. It's contagious. Thank you.
It was very kind. I appreciate that
immensely. I actually had a couple of questions to ask you, so I was sorry that we missed each other this afternoon, so we'll have to just figure out when.
Well, I do have you coming for dinner next.
Okay, that's what I'll ask.
Okay.
So it's your turn. Was it good? Was it not so good? What was it like working with compassion today? Was it interesting? As interesting as the panel?
Yes.
Was it? Oh, good. Everybody find that? Some of you? You knew, of course, that you were going to talk to me. You knew that. I mean, I was so joyous about doing an urban retreat because it meant you give half the class. Yeah. Well, I'm going to be talking a lot for the next 6 months, so this is like your chance. Who's going to tell me what was interesting about it? Nothing?
It worked.
How did it work? What part of it?
It was a lot of work, also. More work than the pebble. Like the pebble was very textural, and you felt it, and you touched it, and so this was a little more, at the beginning, cerebral. I had to remember the process of what I was doing, and then I just played with it instead of trying to stick to structure and form, even
good.
Though that was important. But there was a
I'm
thread
not
that can
give you bad marks for
no.
It's okay. I haven't got a pen anyway, so you none of you are going to get your marks tonight.
I got quickly into my depth issues.
Huh.
Much faster than I expected, so that when I got to the part where, you know, what am I ignoring? It was fun to play with it first, and then suddenly, insight. Without
wonderful.
The 12, 17 steps. So
right.
And the insight was quick, and it went in.
Yeah.
And it was very moving.
And didn't you feel like you had to labor with it? You could just see it, too, without having...
feel it. So
yeah.
That even though I didn't start with a physical feeling something, and then move into what the insight or the response was, I was working with another sense. I was just visualizing an imagery and the visual art.
Mm-hmm.
And then the body responded. So it also supported how everything's connected, no disconnection. So
good.
The interconnection.
Oh, very nice.
Between the different senses.
That's mm-hmm. lovely. That's very nice. Glad to hear that. Oh. You're nodding. What do you got to say?
Well, I can appreciate that, I think. First of all, I didn't work today. I didn't go to my job today, and I recognized that there was going to be this challenge. I was talking to Ellen and Shelley about this earlier, but I was at work. I could almost understand in advance what I would work with in terms of compassion in the job, and when I actually had the day to myself.
Yeah.
So I actually had to deal with me, which made it bigger and scarier.
Well, interesting.
Yeah.
And so what did you do?
Well, I was up in Wakefield. So I ended up doing the meditation on the dock at Meech Lake.
Beautiful.
So so then I went through this, here I am on my urban retreat.
Yeah? On the dock at Meech Lake. Yeah.
So I had to improvise the meditation a little bit, but it actually was really wonderful.
But that's a metropolis for a lot of people.
Well, it
is. A lot of beings.
And a lot of beings. And that's what I realized, that I really didn't, I mean, blocks away, you know, you're really limited to a dog or a cat most of the time.
Yeah.
So this expanded the beings.
Doing how you felt and then taking it out.
But what I found was, because I was working with what I was ignoring, so I worked with that before I sat. And what it became was very, the senses was I found that I have certain, like the sense of smell, what came for me was that I ignore often the sense of smell.
Because the mind is so powerful.
Yes, because I'm so busy.
So that's wonderful, Trudy. Isn't that wonderful?
Well, it was interesting.
Yeah.
And I realized how powerful all the senses are, and what a fight it is between all of them. In a way, not a fight.
Interesting.
But there's all of them are so strong and have their own.
They have their own
definition or whatever it is, and it's what do I choose? What does the mind choose to pay attention to?
Right.
In the course of the day, in the course of. So that ignoring, like, is it just what you think the eyes are perceiving and what the mind perceives the eyes are doing? Or
yeah, what is ignorance?
Yes. So I...
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So that's lovely. And the spatial, when was that?
Well, the space opened up when I would change the focus to whatever it was I thought I was ignoring.
Okay. Yeah.
And even the sitting. I mean, when you watch it in the body, I mean, the body, everything tightens up the minute you give it space. And of course, looking for space is, you know, one of my big themes. So it was very good.
Yeah.
And it was very helpful. It was very helpful to remember what the feeling of spaciousness is.
Yeah.
Because I forget.
Yeah, we all do.
Yeah.
Okay. How about you, ma'am?
I actually have quite a difficult time with it.
Did you?
This is all quite new to me still. So meditation itself, I mean, I'm still stuck at count your breaths because I can't control all the things that come into my mind.
Would you just repeat that last sentence, please, right for the microphone? Could you just say that again?
In a group? All of it?
Yeah, you just can't control what?
All the thoughts that flit through my mind. I mean, I'm still counting.
And could I just have a show of hands here? How many of you here can control all the thoughts? Would you?
I
would have been disappointed.
I thought you were going to ask for the opposite.
So, and how long have you been meditating?
Twenty years.
And you? Can you control all the thoughts in your mind? How long have you been meditating?
10 years.
And you? Can you? How about you?
Well,
you?
Often.
Off and on, no.
No, I thought you meant off.
Can you control all the
absolutely
thoughts?
Not. Absolutely.
You and you?
No.
How long have you been meditating?
20 years.
And you, can you?
No.
And you? And me? No? And let's see. How long have I been my only dog? It's coming close to 40 years for me. So do you suppose that you might actually be trying to do the wrong thing?
Possibly, for sure.
Is this the first time you've heard this? From others?
No, I know that you can't control your thoughts. I suppose I'm trying to say.
But what you're saying says more about how you think
yes,
you should be meditating.
Possibly.
And so I would suggest to you that you might actually have a sense of duty about meditation. Do you? Do you think that you're okay now, I'm going to do this and there's a right way to do it?
I don't even know if I've got that far. I'm just struggling with the understanding. I'm going to sit here. Yes, and now I'm going to start to meditate.
Yeah, and you have an idea. And so I'm saying that you have an idea of duty. I could save you about 10 years if you want. Would you like that?
Sure.
Drop it. Think to yourself, I'm here. I wonder who I am. And I wonder what here is. And then play with that. That would save you about 10 years. I'm not kidding. And this is absolutely serious. just give yourself permission to be born in the moment and think, oh, what is my breath? And then a thought will come, oh yeah, that's a thought. What's my breath? And then another thought will come, yeah, yeah, that's a thought. What's my breath? Just curious. The most powerful thing you can develop to make meditation the joy it will be is interest. Interest is killed by duty. Killed. Because this little list of rules comes up. Is this helpful to you?
Yes, it is.
So try, you know, try it for 3 days the way I'm suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
And see if you have a good time. You know, meditation should be interesting. First it's interesting, and then the discipline part is very simple. Because you know that where it could take you is where you want to go. And you don't want to go worrying about this or that. No, 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 I want to bring my mind back. I want to. It's kind of like Namjoon Rinpoche, my beloved teacher, Namjoon Rinpoche, many years ago was talking about sila morality. And he said, yes, the people who really know the practice of morality are the people who have broken all the rules. Isn't that true, Cecily? And I said, oh, yes, sir. It's kind of like that, you know. Once you know what duty does, you shouldn't have to repeat it for 5 or 10 or 15 years like some people do. There's a short form. You know, maybe I did need to discipline myself. You know, it was a kind of a little prison term I put myself in for, you know, the ways I learned how to be moral. Who knows? But the really interesting thing is interest itself.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So have more of a sense of play. So like it doesn't matter what your mind does. You can always bring it back because you're interested. You want to know whether this exercise that I've given you, and you really don't know me very well, right?
Right.
I mean, who am I? You know, and why should you believe this more than anything else? And there's only one way you're going to find out, not by doing it right because you were born doing it right, but by just being who you are and playing with it. Then if it actually works, then you can come back and say, well, you had one idea. And I will appreciate that. I'm finished haranguing you now, so carry on. So what you have to do is pick, and maybe I didn't say that clearly, I apologize for that, pick something that bothered you but no longer does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Pick something like you step in a dog shit lawn at your friend's place and your friend's dog finally died, so you don't do that anymore. You know?
Okay.
Like something that I'm being engrossed as usual, but it sort of gives the idea, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Something that's not too touchy.
Something that's not touchy at all. But at the time, for whatever reason, maybe bothered you for a week or something. If you can't think of one exactly, make one up that could have been. That's fine too. Because what you're trying to do is get that feeling of what it's like when something bothers you. That is, when you're suffering. And then what it's like when you're not suffering. In a way that doesn't catch you in it. So you can explore what is suffering and what is the cessation of suffering. Neat, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And then really see the two of them. And when you see the two of them, then when you go back to the suffering and you say, and is there any sense of the cessation of suffering in that? Lo and behold, there's the fly and there's the windshield. And the fly is not the whole windshield. Oh, there is the suffering, and there is the spaciousness within which it is located. and you train yourself to do that, then when you meet suffering, there is also a looking for, a sense that there must also be spaciousness present. Is it making it clearer?
Yes. Well, actually, it would be a very good exercise for me to reach that point, because I get sucked into something. I can't watch a bad movie. I can't.
Well, yeah, so probably for you, you have a real talent for compassion, but at the moment, you're not using it. It's using you. Does that make sense? Probably you have an enormous talent for compassion. I was mentioning that to Dave a few days ago when we were visiting, that at one time, you notice that I have this mind. Have you noticed that? I have this mind that likes going to the point. Have you noticed that? Have you? I don't know if you've... Have you noticed that about me? Some people might not notice that. I just wondered if you have. I have this mind that likes to just go to the point. So at one time, before I met Dharma, I used to go and sit in bars, especially in Montreal, la plus belle ville du monde, and listen to people talking until I understood what they were talking about and what their two positions were. Then I would insinuate in a very Scorpio kind of way myself into the table, and, you know, they'd buy me a beer, and I would take the opposite point of view of either one of them and talk in such a way, and I always had a little bet with myself that within a half an hour I could change the view. Now that's like a talent for seeing the point where it was using me. Do you understand that? So for my sins, I have many years of talking to do. I used to lecture people on using drugs, that it was good for them, you see. So now, lots of times, somebody comes to me who's stoned, and I think, oh, come in, welcome, I'm so glad, this gives me an opportunity.
You're wrong, don't do it.
Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm saying that when you have a talent, it will often manifest by swallowing you. Charles Lindbergh was afraid of heights. Tchaikovsky went to his mother when he was 4 and said, how do you turn the music off? Isn't that interesting? Picasso was kicked out of school for doodling in the margins. Isn't that amazing? You can go on and on and on. So now you know that that's your talent, but you know that what happens is you don't have enough space in it. When it arises, you get sucked in. So you start with the small. Does that make sense? Do you think you could play with it?
I think I could play with it and practice it a lot before I would.
Play with it. Play with it. Always play. And when you cannot, when you're watching a movie, for example, and a sad part happens, you know what you do? Do you want me to tell you what you do? Switch your focus so that although you still see the picture, you're watching the screen. What would that do?
Well, it would hold you back.
It would hold, no, it would create space. Space. It would create space. It doesn't hold you back. It creates space. It creates objectivity. The consort of form is space. Without space, you can't do anything. You just get swallowed in everything. You can't differentiate. So to be able to use space well is very important with compassion. And because, you know, I have noticed that almost every day I see something that's painful. It must be hard for you in the world. But if you had more space, then you could identify when that pain was actually useful to a person. That was a good pebble in their shoe. And appreciate their pain. Think, boy, you know, I really am delighted they've got that to use. You would be able to see when that was true. And if somebody had a really good pain and kept thinking they should foist it off on somebody else, you wouldn't get caught. Because you would know. Oh, they just want somebody else to do their work. What a good idea. Should I cripple this person? Do I feel like going around and crippling people today? Because that would be like crippling them, wouldn't it, if you agreed? Because it's really their salvation, that door. I'm going to go and take it away so I can...
I took his pain away. I took her hell. Aren't I good? Do you see my gold star?
Right? Not a gold star. That's because I don't like the pain myself. Whereas if I can see it... Does this make sense about compassion? If I can see it and I can realize what the value of that pain is for that person, I don't have to cripple them. I don't have to move into it. I can say, wow, you've got a really important choice there, don't you? I certainly support you. You don't walk away. You don't have to close the door. You can say, you know, you really, I think I can see the talent in you to work with this. Because if you can see that it is something for that, you can also see that they can work with it. Isn't that, in fact, more or less the basis for what they call tough life or love? You know that? Isn't that, in fact, where you actually see someone, you see what they're struggling with, and you don't try to aid them? Because you know that's their power, that is their gateway to power. You go in there and you take it away, they're just going to have to get something worse. So tell me what you did do, and I'll try not to talk so much.
Well, I've taken up most of the time. The only thing I was...
Oh, yeah, that was good. Wasn't that good? She slipped that one in really good, didn't she?
I was hoping that would stay there for a while. Thank you.
Yeah, she has taken up most of the time. I guess we'll have to stay until 10 tonight. And it's all your fault.
Really. I had more luck with the imagining someone else suffering what I was suffering.
The four directions?
Yes.
That's nice, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And that's a way of getting space.
And that's also calming.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because the state of suffering, usually what happens with it is we get isolated by it. But it's not true. I mean, you know, sad as it may be to my super Scorpio ego, I am not the only person experiencing an emotion in the entire of the universe. Damn. <You know? laughs> But on the other hand, good. Learning what you cannot handle is the peak of compassion. I was really upset one time when I was looking after my sweet mama that I couldn't do something for her that I wanted to do. And just at the same time, somebody phoned me I hadn't heard from for a long, long time, and they said, I was just reading this quote, and it just reminded me of you, and I knew you would love it, and it just reminded me of you. And so here it is. Overcome the bitterness of your heart because you are not up to the magnitude of the pain that has been entrusted to you. Now, see, when you work compassion as much as you can to develop the sense of space, then you find that part of yourself that wishes to be up to the magnitude of the pain that is entrusted to you. and know as you can. So when you accept the doorway of suffering, it takes you to the doorway of the divine. And there's no other way to go there. Mm-hmm. There's no other way to go there. You either go there for you, for the benefit of all beings, or you go there because you don't want to be caught anymore in dissatisfaction. But it is suffering that is the doorway to the divine. Nothing else is. Like trying to insulate yourself or make somebody else the enemy. It can amuse you for, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 or 5,000 lifetimes. I'm sure I've done it more than once, many lifetimes. But there is a point where overcome the bitterness of your heart. You have to overcome the bitterness, the suffering, the feeling of awe. Because the bitterness, because you're not up to the magnitude of the pain that has been entrusted to you. Entrusted to you. This is your gift. This is a doorway. The instructions for how to open it aren't there. You have to find the way. And as soon as you find the way and you figure out how to open it, lo and behold, the sucker's open. It has never been closed. So in the... And you're just really good at doing this. I just go blah, blah, blah with you, don't I?
Go on.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be, you guys supposed to be.
That's what I'm going to talk about later tonight, so you go on.
Well, I'm finished. That was as far as I got with
space.
With the
doing it in the four directions. And the three breathings, what did you share?
Just, all that I worked on was just the sense of, I understand. I didn't really get to the point of sharing.
But the exercise was to do that. Try that next time. Again, that's something that will help you, you specifically, to set that some clear, solid thing.
And you said a sense story.
A sense door.
Door, okay.
Sense door. One of the sense doors. See, these are called doors in Buddhism.
Okay.
There are six of them. You know all six.
No, sound, taste, smell, touch. What else have I got? Seeing, yes, sound, taste, smell, touch, seeing.
Mind. For instance, Trudy is very good with the mind door. But the other five, she discovered today, aren't quite so powerful for her. So you have six doors. Neat, huh? The thing about the mind door is that it will work on past information. So you have to have experiences to have new thoughts. So you need a balance between them, not an evenness. Like each of the senses don't work the same evenness. But it's a real holiday sometimes just to go on a sense exploration because it gives you new thoughts. So I would like you to play with that some more and make sure you add the senses. Yeah, sense
door.
You've already gone. Your turn.
Did what I could. There were two things that stood out. One at the end, when at the end of the meditation, when you asked us to, whether it was an animal or a human, whether it was.
Yeah, do the double questions. Yeah.
Yeah. This little boy, around the age of 16, appeared, who was living in this incredible, maybe 16 to 18, teenager, was living in this incredible palace. That's where it was 3 blocks away. I don't know Ottawa, so it could have been a palace. And I saw. saw this little boy suffering in the midst of everything that seemed beautiful. I mean, there was light in the room. There were beautiful smells. I mean, it couldn't have been more beautiful, this space. And there was this boy, dull to all the riches that were around him. And then it was no longer just he who was dull to all the riches that are around, but it's all there. And that it seemed to me, it doesn't matter what those riches may be, they're there, we don't see them. And that was ignorance. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So it links to the ignorance of the other exercise. It all kind of just threaded.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started to see, I guess, mine, I could only see so far. And I think I couldn't see past the one that gets me, which I called havoc. Because when there's havoc, there wasn't clarity. And I couldn't see that, a kind of madness that takes over when there's no clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed that if I could, then all the riches that little boy was in the midst of, the jewels, the gems, that would be there.
Mm-hmm.
That seemed like suffering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So they kind of worked together, even though they were done at separate times, they came very
mm-hmm.
much together.
Thank you.
I guess the technique one, when I got to that one was most of it has been said, actually, but just that sense of not separateness, that sense of unity.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to...
And did that shift the feeling?
Totally. I was far less self-centered and self-absorbed.
Neat, huh?
Yeah, it was really marvelous. And then when I got to the park where I was supposed to send somebody to me, the senses. Well, I would have to sense it first before I could send it to you.
Okay.
Yeah. So then I got to smell the air.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I could feel the wind on my face
mm-hmm.
before I could send it. Mm-hmm. That was really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a reason to pay attention again.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Thank you.
Later.
Okay. Later.
Me too. I played with both today. The first one we're working with things that bother me. I played with it using different speed, like the back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Faster, slower, and so on. It's interesting. As the speed increases, the feeling of the spaciousness has a bigger impact on the uneasiness.
Oh, for goodness
sake. And to such an extent that I got so much energy going into my head that I decided to lie down on my bed and repeat the exercise. And anyway, so that's
isn't she fun? I mean, I love it. When Benny does a meditation, I can hardly wait.
Yeah, it was too much energy, so I decided to
lie down. Absolutely.
So that the energy won't go to the head.
Did you put your feet up?
No, I was doing that already. I was doing that, but the energy was still going to my head.
Right.
So I went to my bed and I lied down and repeated the exercise again, and that's when I had more success, because maybe the relaxation helped.
Yeah.
With the speed. The second one is very
good. You could have done it without the speed too, and that would have helped too.
Yeah.
But you were enjoying the speed.
Yes, I was the slowing down the faster, and seeing the transition that changes from one to another.
I know.
So that was interesting. The second one was, I spent quite a bit of time exploring what I was trying to ignore. Mm-hmm. But it was mainly in the mind, though. I don't know why it kept on doing that.
Maybe the mind is trying to ignore the body.
Yes.
Maybe that was it.
But it was interesting because it came to my realization that there is a tendency towards the negativity. And as soon as I see that, and I say, wow, you got all these things. You can see the trees, you have perfect knowledge.
No. That's the ignorance. That's the ignorance. The tendency to look for the negative, mm-hmm. to ignore the positive, mm-hmm. look for where the problem is. Mm-hmm. For many people, that's the main ignorance they have. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
You did know that already. Before you did the exercise, you knew that?
It was not very clear, but
so now, so now you know it, you see, mm-hmm. but you didn't really clearly know it before.
It wasn't very clear.
So now you have a real insight into something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, tell me more.
So I noticed that negativity, and it became very clear to me tendency of my mind, not somebody else's mind, towards that. So I watch it, and during the day, like, very mindful. Whatever I do, touching the wheel of the car, I touch it, and then I say, oh, okay, here, mindfulness. Okay, what does the mind want to say now? Okay, don't say that again. You try to be too perfect. So that was a good exercise for me.
That's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad. Thank you. Thomas, or five or six?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the most benefit is the space that I found the more, that's more space, especially when I don't need to do the four directions.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Isn't it? It gives a whole different quality to the feeling.
That's right.
Yeah. And it's actually quite easeful.
Yeah.
The mind doesn't get dull with it, though. Mm-hmm. Did you notice that? There's still the clarity, still the ability to focus, but there's an easefulness.
Yeah. It's just...
Do you understand why compassion and space are closely linked? Because you don't lose any of your intelligence or anything, but there's this quality of easefulness. Like if you feel a lot of grief or something, and you give space to it rather than trying to control it, there's like it just changes the whole way it's flowing.
This feeling never had before.
Yeah, I'm glad.
It's most than now, I would say.
Thank you.
Well, at first I couldn't feel anything that bothered, but I knew people that bothered me in the past, but I couldn't...
Remember the feeling of it?
Couldn't remember the feeling of it, so I started putting them into objects or balls, and then I could, I could see the ball, and then I could come away from it. And at first I had to start with something that really bothered me, that was, that was big enough that I could start to feel
it. A real sense of it,
A real sense of it. And by putting it into an object or a ball, I could then start seeing the spaciousness of it. And I could then come away from it and go back to it, come away from it. And I like that idea of speed, because you could feel it, that when you went back and forth, all of a sudden the two would start to blend.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a very neat exercise. The one with trying to ignore things, or trying to figure out what you ignored, I had a hard time with that because I was probably ignoring it. But I find that very difficult because the sense of ignoring means that you know about it, but you're just going to ignore it. And I had a sense...
It's either willful or unwillful.
Yeah, well, I was trying to feel what I was unaware of, and
you may be aware of it, but not on a conscious level.
Yeah.
Like, for example, aware of the negative, the mind that always looks for the negative. but not really be conscious of that, not conscious of it operating. So it's more like that that I want to do.
But the thing with the sort of the 10 paper is I could do that for hours.
Yeah.
You know, I found that very restful that I could just sip with a cigarette and go back and forth with that and use that as a break.
Yeah, good. With whatever you were feeling in there. And what was it that was interesting about that, other than you're very relaxing? What else did you find?
Well, I tend to, when I get into that, I get into, I don't know, I'll call it a funk or something like that. But I start seeing, it's, well, you described it before, it's sort of spacious. Like, when you start not seeing yourself, you start seeing sort of the space that the five of us were in.
Domes and balls.
Thanks. The morning was a, I mean, you know, I had all these things to do, so was the question was whether I was going to get through it all, and I found that it was a lot easier to do it than I thought it would be. But it was still very interesting, and a lot of it is very new, so it was it was fun putting space into a problem, and I liked the feeling. It was all new, so at least in the exercise form, it's all new, so that was good. And it was fun improving my brother's tennis game, for example. I was he's a wonderful player, but as soon as he gets into competition, he locks up, and his body just...
Yeah.
But when he plays with me, there's no game, no competition. It's a thing of beauty. It's just this incredible technique. But so it was fun doing that.
Yeah.
Space and that. During work, which is, again, really, really demanding and difficult, I really enjoyed the part of looking for what is it that I'm ignoring. In my dream, I had a dream this morning too, which, hey, don't forget this, which was linked to the work and everything, so it was great. But there was a pattern, the things that I'm ignoring are, I ignored the pain of my stomach, which is really, 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 really unpleasant for the last week or so. And I ignored that. I ignored sadness, which I noticed because I was found myself in a deep sigh. And I ignored the resentment of sacrificing my values for this workplace, which, you know, there's a resentment toward that. So all of those, they're all feelings.
Yeah. And they are also interacting. Yes. The stomach probably interacts a bit with the sense of ethics.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
oh, there's
so
no question about it. The body is linked in that sense to those specific feelings. So it was, and then of course the connecting up to others, feeling the same feeling.
Yeah.
It was a full day in the midst of a full day of meditation work in the midst of a very full day, which starts early and ends late.
So it was an urban retreat day for sure.
Yeah.
Bring it forward, yeah.
Yeah. I found that doing that exercise changed the dynamic of how I related to the event. In a very positive way.
Yeah.
First of all, I thought, you know, of something that disturbed still did. And then I put, you know, some more spaciousness around that and just kind of sat with it.
Excellent.
And it changed the
dynamic.
And there was another person involved, and
this
person, you know, said some things that really bothered me.
Were hurtful, yeah.
Yeah. And today, as it turned out, it's her birthday. And, like, I knew her birthday was coming, but I had told myself, well, I'm not going to call her, you know, and when ordinarily I would. But then I had a real feeling of love and affection mm-hmm. for her, because I've known her for a long, long time.
Yes.
She lives in another city, so we don't see each other that often, but when we do see each other, we're always sort of able to really connect.
Bridge.
Well,
yeah.
Anyway, so I called her, so that was all very nice, you know, that other meditation came up with a positive. You know, the four directions, I found that helpful in terms of, you know, thinking of times when I was depressed and I felt very alone.
It's true, isn't it?
And tried to sort of you know, embody that feeling of how it was and how awful it was at that time and how lonely and
mm-hmm.
awful I felt. And sort of going back to that feeling
And did you find that you got specific answers?
Yes, I did.
Isn't that curious?
Yeah.
Did you argue about it first, or did you just do it?
No, it was just really easy to do. I felt like someone came into the radar screen.
And it's exactly right.
Person, but
some people find it very difficult to do that, mm-hmm. but in fact, if you mm-hmm. keep doing this little exercise, mm-hmm. you find you will actually pick up.
Right. Yeah. So, people were very real.
You actually are praying for people who actually are in that state mm-hmm. and actually do want your prayers.
Wow.
And you actually are sending them mm-hmm. away through.
Mm-hmm.
Because an emotion is a globe, and it also is something that affects a whole area. When there is terror, when somebody breaks into a house on a street, everybody buys locks. Why?
And I wasn't as attentive to the ignorance one, you know. I tried to be, but then I forget, and I had a really busy day. But also, I mean, I think it's also symbolic because it's I don't want to recall what.
I mean, if you remember yesterday, I said I think I've given you too much.
Yeah.
And I did give you a lot. You know?
Yeah.
And when I'm, this is a fault of my teaching this retreat, that I have this excitement about what I would like you to, you know, like all these different tools I'd like to give to you.
But they're wonderful.
But really, one should spend like 3 months mm-hmm. on the loving kindness.
Mm-hmm.
Because they build one on the other. When the loving kindness is easy, the compassion, when you get a familiarity with the loving kindness, the compassion is just a piece of cake. It's just a piece of cake. Because you know that feeling of kindliness, and so everything that you're doing in terms of compassion is already resting on the kindliness. You've decided for the kindliness already, because you've been practicing it for like 3 months, you know. So that's like set up. But, and you know, it's hard to contain my greed and your need here. Am I tone down my greed and appreciate your need for not too much to do, you know? Enough that you can do. So I'll try to do better.
Yeah, and it does. I mean, my favorite way of describing it is if you all go off to a family picnic and you're all totally in love with each other and your family and you're all having a wonderful time and you're father, mother, sister, brother has packed all the most exquisite things that you most personally love to eat, and you find an absolutely perfect place, and all the ants are actually on the side of the blanket doing barbershop quartet kind of ant. You get the picture. And it's absolutely a glorious day, and you fall asleep, and then you wake up in a half dream, half sleep, and everybody is having loving conversations, and in my case, at my picnic, various people are reciting different poets, and And, you know, some of the reports I've never read, and it's just absolutely magnificent. And then, you know, a few of my favorite poems are being thrown out, too. And then somebody does the whole of the Four Quartets of T.S. Eliot, and I'm just drooling all over the place. And then you get back in the car, and you go back, and you're driving back to the city, and you get a flat tire. And you get home, finally, because now it's rush hour, too. Right? And you have to go to the bathroom. And somebody says, how are your day? You say, oh, God, I've got a flat tire. Most of the time, there can be billions and billions of moments of satisfaction. Most of the time, you report the big glitch.
Big glitch.
Yeah. Most of the time, you do.
Absolutely.
We do. You're sitting around, you're habituated, you're all having a really good time, you're all facing the fire, it's cave person days. Is that politically astute? And everybody's happy. You're having a really good time, you're all gnawed on your pet last bone and throwing it over your shoulder, and everything's great, and you're all in Hunga and Munga, the kids are, you know, asleep by the fire, and everything's fine, and you hear a roar, and you go, or even if you don't hear a roar. You know, so everything's fine. But every change, every sound you look for, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? And especially hearing. Mm. Hearing. This is ignorance in the Tibetan system. Your eyes have the power of ignorance. You would not be able to see if you didn't have the power of ignorance. Your ears have the power of hatred. Because everything would all be the same plane. Can't see. What is an altar? An altar is what you lift up out of totality and place something on because you want to focus. Any lifted surface is an altar. I'm taking this out of the sea of totality and I'm using it for focus. Okay. I'm ignoring everything else. The eyes, their power is ignorance. The ears' power is hatred. What was that? What was that? What was that? Does that make sense?
No.
Doesn't it? You have to talk to the Tibetans about it. It makes sense to me, but that's how they do it.
I can't relate that to what I can relate to, which is that beautiful day and the flat tire and the coming home and being asked how my day was and saying I had a flat tire. I can totally relate to that. But I can't make the connection.
Because when you first feel the anger is when it's going ba-dum, ba-dum. I mean, it's like you're not. It isn't right, and you're. It's like, but I'm not. I'm not talking about the visual flat tire. I'm talking about what triggers us off mostly for something to be wrong. The sense door that's responsible for looking for what's wrong is the ears.
Wow.
The sense of hearing. Pride. Avarice. The smell eaters, you know, looking for identity, looking for something to grasp, passion, lust, that must surprise you. I'll control myself. Jealousy. Me too, me too. Oh, me too, me too. Oh, me too. Oh, me too. Over here, over here. So each of your sense doors has power. And the mind door is the power of creation of reality, or what we will call reality. the mind, you can imagine all the senses. Like, I could image having a sip of tea if I wasn't here, even with this cup. I could image the feeling of the cup. I could image lifting at the weight of the cup. I could image it in perfect detail. And I could sip it. And I could even find a certain contentment in that. And I could actually feel like I had sipped it. But the real truth is, it is nothing like actually sipping. And so you notice that all of those things are resultant. The mind works on past. It is not causal, it's resultant. So it creates form. It is not the creating. So what is the motive for that creation? Is it a motive from the divine, or is it a motive from self-cherish? That's the question. And that's the difference between a religious practice and a practice just not to be quite so neurotic and have a good relationship or get a gold card or whatever it is you're interested in. The difference is whether you're willing to traverse that path to where the mind is directed by the divine or directed by self-cherish. So that's where the work of compassion takes you. To where you realize that no matter how many times you satisfy the four demons, it doesn't make you happy. They're never satisfied. And the more you feed them, the more they require food. The more you accumulate, the more you need. It's true.
Yes.
Or the more you refuse to accumulate, the more you need to refuse to. Their opposites also work. Which is something that a lot of people don't like to look at. I know often when I was living in monasteries in Thailand, I would see people whose neuroses fit the path really well. Because they really weren't interested in sexuality. In fact, they really enjoyed hating and not wanting to surrender to sexuality. Make excellent monks. They could jot and tittle those rules better than anybody I ever seen. Just paragons of virtue. But their motive was hatred.
Mm-hmm.
Not love of the divine, but grateful to find a place that fit their neuroses. I'm not knocking that. I think they probably did very good work there. You know, and may we all find a place that fits our neuroses. You know? So that at some point we might say, okay, and I would like something more. But it's not until your belly is full that you will move beyond.
What was the hatred directed towards? You said these monks were
fine. I don't know, maybe they didn't like their mothers. I don't know. I mean, a lot of things. The feeling of responsibility, you know. I have a friend who has been a monk off and on, and his mother thought boys were bad. But that's what she was taught. So the three brothers were bad, no matter what they did. The two girls were good. I mean, that was her pain, and like any good mother, she passed it on. I can't solve it, maybe you can take it, you know? And my friend actually tried to work with it. oh, this is the pain I'm living in. I'm going to see what I can do. And he actually learned how to give some of it back to his mother and work with the part that he actually got a little attached to. You know? I'm not sure I'm answering your question. Do you think I am? Or?
I'm just confused by what you're saying in terms of, it doesn't really matter.
Sure it does.
You're talking about these monks and that your experience of them is...
Some of them were
full of hate.
Their motive for practicing celibacy and all the rules was hatred of the physical, not renunciation so that they, because their bellies were full, but because they didn't want to go there in the first place.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I guess I wouldn't call that hate, but anyway, just
not wanting. It's like closing a door. Hate is a door closed a whole bunch of times in a row, which is big close. One time and then it opens again is called dislike. The same action repeatedly held by the mind is called hatred. It's the same thing as saying no. And say, no, oh, okay, that's called dislike. I really don't want it, but, you know, if it has to be here, that's okay. But that comes and then holds, that's hatred. It's just a very quick thing in the mind, but if it maintains, you know, if it repeats a bunch of times. Say, like, you have... you know, we're all born with three possible main talents for reacting to life. My main talent is like, oh yeah, I'll have more of that, please. Oh no, I can have two pieces. Oh no, it's okay. Yeah, let's go to the movie and go skating. You know, like that's my kind of reaction. And it's called greed type. It's like, yeah, if it's something around, I'll take five. And usually that's, and greed type is usually motivated that way because there is a feeling that something's missing here. A big hole. That's particular. The greed type is like, maybe I can get it up there. A hate type is usually there's something missing out there. Let's go to a movie. Oh, there's nothing worth seeing. And the third type is called delusion type. The delusion type is like, they are the intellectuals of our world. They are like really excellent. They're like, they can have an overview of something that's absolutely magnificent. Anything except experience it firsthand. So a delusion type is like, afraid to say yes and afraid to say no. So what they do is they relate it to 20, like I had an aunt once, I don't know. Do you have aunts?
Oh, yes.
How many?
You don't really want to know.
I was just wondering.
How many aunts do I have? About eight.
Really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that on your mother's side? Or
yes, both.
All around. Do they all live in this area?
No, none of them do.
Oh, where do they live?
Well, they live all over North America, but most of
them. Do you ever travel around and visit them all? And what happened to what I was talking about? We just went off on your ass. Ooh, now we're traveling around North America. Aren't we? See, that's what a delusion is. What I just did. You just take a point and then just all of a sudden it's diffused. And you're not sure what happened.
I was wondering. That's very good.
Where did that go? Wait a minute. I said,
that's
and
my work
he
know.
Said. And, yeah, it's a talent. And it also is an overview, isn't it? And it is a feeling of like not wanting to get trapped in anything, isn't it? Or am I wrong? I'd like to get more information for you. I'm not sure yet. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing as that one you get trapped.
I beg your pardon?
That's what I thought you said. One in two people are very good at all three of these. But there tends to be one of those three that all of us will more likely do as a pattern. More likely. Given a choice, we will fall more likely. All of us are all three.
The other side, just even briefly for those that haven't heard it, and for me.
Greed ties faith,
right?
You know, the quality of greed, and you look, like I'm saying, you know, like you probably have a real talent for compassion, you know? Why? Because you just get sucked right in, you know? You need to do a little more work with space. There are two of you here. I swear you dumb as chain raising. I swear. Just vibrating. But we won't go there. So like when you have a particular talent of like greed, hate, or delusion, that's just the Buddhist way. Usually in Buddhism you only talk about what isn't working. But if you look at delusion, what?
Just by saying that in Buddhism you normally talk about what isn't working, it just sort of tied into when you were saying
about
the
ignorance. Negative, yeah.
I just had this whole other view of
Buddhism.
No wonder I was attracted.
Okay. So you can see that the power of the delusion type is to be able to hook many facts together and get an overview. Now she's got 8 aunts from her both parents, and they live all over North America. And already, you know, I'm figuring out how I would go on summer holidays to visit them all. You know, and I'm going to hook her in and see, you know, who's got the most time off and just one of them have a hot tub. And, you know, right? It's like that kind of thing. It's like it's this overview, and usually involves a lot of other people. Make good managers, you know, good. Does that make sense? There is this ability to see how things would all function. And a tendency to continue to work on the functioning rather than being in the body. So when there is body experience, it's very difficult for a delusion. Because they really would rather not have that. Thank you very much. It's interfering. So usually it has to happen with some kind of kafoof before they really pay attention. Because otherwise they just tell a story about it, take some medicine, and carry on with their delusion. Do a whole delusional thing about doctors. Or, you know, about whatever it is. And so you can see that in the West, they are intellectuals.
Don't I live with one?
Yes. Yes, you do. And beautiful he is. And magnificent tense. Magnificent tense. Magnificent. Just absolutely gorgeous. Just wonderful. But if it ever is actually raining, be careful. Unless you can live on stories, and then if it starts raining, what you need to do is find a greed type where you can make the rain into a glorious shower or something, or you know, a miracle of nature. But don't go live with a hate type, because they'll just blow up the world if it's raining. Hate type, basically, they can identify the problem, but then they can't necessarily understand that there might be space around the problem. So what hate type needs to do, they have a beautiful intellect, but they get frozen. When there is something wrong, they get frozen on how wrong it is. So with a hate type, you always give them a choice. You know, preferably of three things.
you say, and you don't say, which one do you like? Never, never, never to a hate type, because they'll go, like? You must be joking. This isn't what I was going to talk about tonight. Instead, you see something like, which one of these keys is the ugliest? Something that way, you know. And they'll quickly tell you. You know, there will be one where the shape is just particularly obnoxious. And you say, oh, okay, you take that one and you give them the other one. And they're so busy watching themselves not get the one they hate that they've already moved. Otherwise, they get frozen. Because they have a mind that can pick a detail. They can see why something isn't going to work. Greed type, faith. Hate type, intelligence. Delusion, overview. That's what we're good at. Is that? Any other questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
So this was the next step here is to move into sympathetic joy and equanimity. Is that the
I'm toying with the idea of, and yesterday I toyed with this, and today I'm toying with it more. That what I'd like to do is introduce sympathetic joy and equanimity, but first I would like to put more focus on the last stage of compassion. So like I was going to talk tonight about the next stage of compassion, which is basically developing bodhicitta. And then sympathetic joy and equanimity make sense. If you don't have the bodhicitta, then they don't make sense. Now, interestingly, in Buddhism, bodhicitta is not actually already a seed ready to grow. There is the potential for the seed ready to grow in all beings, but you actually have to perform the mental habits that create it as a fecund seed. You know, there are all the qualities to develop bodhicitta are present, but they're not actually gathered in a way that are ready to grow until you do that work. Mm. And the work is basically where we ended yesterday, which was at the sense of knowing that it's a combination of the loving kindness and the compassion, the loving kindness of if you do it long enough, for like 3 months or so, and you realize that all beings could be your mother. You can either do that by knowing that all emotions are shared by all beings and that, like, your mother wasn't always perfect. I know that was a terrible shock to me when I all of a sudden realized that my parents were not fully awakened beings. Because I thought they were when I was born there. I mean, that's where I was going. But no, they're just ordinary people. What a surprise. And then you have to forgive them for that. And then you have to forgive yourself for having to forgive them for that. You know, you go through all the stages and eventually you get so you can just see them with their problems just like you have. And see them with their problems just like you have. And then maybe they have this one a little more than you did, you think, or that one a little less, you think, or whatever. But basically, essentially, all beings desire happiness. Essentially. Mm-hmm. And all beings live under truth. Essentially. And whatever is fed is what grows. Mentally, emotionally, and physically. It's very nice to know that. Want something to grow in you? Feed it. It'll grow. And as Saltramont Alioni says, if you feed a demon, it gets smaller. If you fight it, it gets bigger. So all beings desire pleasure, and all beings live on our, what is the word? Dependent on nutriment. Those are the two really important factors. When you understand that there's some kind of depth, when you actually take that in and really pay attention, you realize that one way or another, all beings are your mother. All beings are your father. Continuously providing nutriment, continuously creating support for your life. Whether you like the support or feel the support or don't is not the issue.
Yeah.
It's not possible to separate ourselves from somebody else's support. Whether we call it support or not is not the issue. The question is whether or not we are going to actually learn how to use whatever comes to us as actual nutriment, or whether we're going to continue with our argument because our parents aren't, all beings are mother, aren't the Buddha. So it comes down to that. Can you see that? Anybody have any problem with that? If you hold that as a working hypothesis, and you begin to move in your life, then when you meet someone or something that is causing stress for you, you actually think to myself, this is my kind mother, who is caught in dissatisfactoriness. I wish I could help them. You don't focus on your dissatisfaction, you know? You focus instead that you feel this frustration, they must too. Mm-hmm. And maybe they feel it so badly that they've decided to ignore it. That happens. But this is my kind mother. I wish I could help them. Then it's very clear to you that you can't help everybody. Isn't that true? Could you help everybody that you see in the day?
No.
Nobody. Nobody can. An arahant can. In Buddhism, a Sammasambuddha might be able to. At least can clearly differentiate why they can't and help them as much as they can. But until you have that standing, you can't help them. But what you can do is really wish to be able to someday, sometime, have some kind of power to help all beings. When you realize that all beings are not different from your kind mother, and that they are caught in dissatisfactoriness, they don't know the way out, they don't even know how they got there, they're reacting to circumstances, blindly caught, and whatever frustration you feel, can you imagine, at least you know the circumstances. What it must be like for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the real sense gets very strong to actually help them. So, full compassion is the willingness to save or protect all beings, to rescue them from different kinds of suffering. So you did the first kind of practice, which is like with the mother, the same as the loving kindness. Then the next kind of practice
you actually look around at people who you would say would be in hell. Mm-hmm. If you know anyone who is a murderer, if you work in a jail or something, this is probably easier. If not, turn on the news. And look at somebody who you really consider must be in hell. And you think that person has no idea how they got where they are. And they are caught in a degree of suffering that is not going to change for lifetimes. You work with that. When you see and you say, it would be wonderful to be able to help them. You see, you don't like dissolve into their pain or da 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 da. You just name it. It would be wonderful to help them. You're strengthening your aspiration by being able to see what is and thinking it would be wonderful to help them. If you have trouble doing that, look at the screen. There's always a screen, you know. When you're watching something, the movie is also playing in your mind. I told you that your mind takes the stories from the past and creates a reality, right? If you're caught in something, you can look at the inner movie that's playing and see the screen on which it's playing. Mm-hmm. Two. The screen is always there. You can always look at it. Whether or not you're at the theater. This theater is always running. Does that help? So you work with beings in hell, beings who are like hungry ghosts, who, you know, no matter what, they never have enough. You know people like that? Maybe you're like that? I don't know. That no matter what, there's always somebody that has something better. They just eat stuff. Usually one in every block. Very painful. I just feel how that must feel. That at night they have to, you know, run through what everybody else has. And think, God, I gotta get that. What kind of life is that? So again, like you allow yourself to think, and you go through the six realms and the animals who have very little sense of being able to see how cause and effect actually works, can't watch it long range, have some sense of it. I have seen animals create tools, but I've never seen them build a house with thermostats in the winter. Have you? I'm not saying that that's such a hot idea. I'm just saying it points to a quality of the animal, non-human animal existence. I'm not saying it's a spiritual ideal to have a house with thermostats either. I know that doesn't, it's not really too bad, but, especially if once in a while you turn it down just to remember. It's like a pebble in the shoe, you know? Kind of, like, oh, and by the way. And then humans. I mean, you actually think about each of these realms, humans, what humans have. Caught between doubt and desire. Doubt, desire, doubt, desire, doubt, desire. Yes, I can. Oh, no. Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Oh, okay. Oh, right? Caught between doubt and desire, right? And the suffering of that, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Isn't it? Like not looking for the middle point between.
between those two, not even seeing how the swings are swings of the same energy, not finding the middle point. So like with all the possibilities of the richness of vision, of the, like the qualities of cause and effect, the power of a human birth, and not able to find the middle way between those two. And then there's the Asuras, who can always see why somebody else has what they deserve. Like wars.
What's the word? Asura?
A-S-U-R-A. Sort of like titans. Sort of demigods. Not quite gods, but they know they should be. Who have a certain satisfaction, but, you know, sort of, I always think of them as workaholics in the war realm. You know what I mean? Like, they just never can rest until they're going out and having one more war or winning one more thing. Or so that it stops them from enjoying what they've got. They're not hungry ghosts. But there is a similar kind of quality. Hungry ghosts, no matter what they get, it burns them. The Asura is what they don't get burns them. There's a different quality, and they already have a lot, and they don't appreciate it.
That would be the American collective conscious.
Yeah, it sort of bounces between the Asuras and the God realm. And so does the Canadian. Mm-hmm. Canadian tends a little more godly because we're not quite so patriotic. We don't think we have rights quite the same way. We just quietly expect things to go our way.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So the God realm is pride. That quality of actually believing you deserve everything you've got, and that somebody else could actually betray you. You know that feeling? Like as if you were betrayed? Any of you ever felt betrayed? Did you ever think that your betrayal was yourself because you preferred not to see something? Mm-hmm. I one time was married, and some of you know my husband, so I won't mention his name, because that would be such a big protection. And at this time, he was very young. He is 10 years younger than me. And I left the monastery because I couldn't get past this. Are you interested in all these personal stories? Isn't that terrible of you? And I couldn't get past this thing that, you know, if I was really going to be a good daughter, I should get married, you know? It's like, you know, I wrote a letter to my beloved teacher, Namgyal Rinpoche, and he gave it to this other person to answer for me, who I was not particularly fond of, this other person. It's really lowest of the low that he would do that. Pouring out my heart to him, he gave it this. So I left the monastery and got married to this guy who obviously needed to get married to. And in those days, it's not true anymore, I might add, very emphatically. He was prone to creating a reality according to how he thought it should be, verbally. And then when we separated, all these things that were not the way I thought they were started coming to light one after the other after the other. It's like hosting them. And most of them were like totally unnecessary. You know, I mean, they were like, why would he say that?
Like, duh.
Yeah.
And so I'm on retreat, you know. I have a suggestion: if you ever leave a relationship, go on 5 safaris in Kenya, and
there's a way to do it. Okay, let me talk to you about this. I have brilliant ideas.
That's what I did. Then you go to Europe and you do a 3-month retreat, and then you go on a boat trip with Namgyal Rinpoche for, you know, 3-4 months. Then you come back. You know, it's quite a nice way to do it.
Is your spouse to pay the bill for all that?
Probably not. if he had, he might not have told you the truth about it. You might be kicked off the boat or something. Yeah. Better not to go there. We won't go there. And so I'm on this 3-month retreat in between, and I finished doing my sit, and then I'm just sitting, and these thoughts came into my mind. Thoughts came into my meditator's mind. And it's you know, it's the kind of, how I have suffered, which I'm very good at. And I'm doing, and he said this, and it wasn't true. Oh, and he lied about that. And that wasn't true. And he even lied about that. And I have no defiance against lies. And this, because I've just been sitting, this wonderful sense of humor that I have somewhere hidden in the back of my head is some little black hole that every once in a while, like the one in the trash can, and it kind of does that on Sesame Street. Comes up, this little black head comes out and looks at me and says, "That's a lie." So, you know, I'm crying and I'm roaring. And I'm like, "Oh, it's a lie! It's a lie!" Blew my cover right there. Because I was betrayed. Except I didn't want to know. And it wasn't betrayed. I just didn't want it to be that way. And my sense of reality held in my mind was interfered with by, oh damn, the universe has not gone the way I think it should. That's not betrayal. That's like learning the law of gravity. The only person who can betray you is yourself. Because you don't want something to be true. When you find out that you have actually believed a lie, if you have actually paid attention, you might feel anger, and then you should feel compassion. But that person would be so caught. Or compassion for yourself not being able to hear the truth. Or whatever. Do you understand that? Mm-hmm. So that would be good practice. It would also save a lot of drama. And I never did get an Oscar for that role. I was brilliant.
Yeah, damn, I was good. Oh my God. Okay. I'm sorry I'm so scattered tonight.
And so then you have looked at all 6 realms. You've looked at the God realm where there is pride, like, for example, never always being honest, or, you know, it can be pride in a lot of ways, right? Yeah, and pride is always hard to see because it's usually underneath it is fear. Because your sense of your sanity of yourself is involved. Does that make it clear? So that you don't want to see because you'll have to revise your opinion of yourself.
Yeah,
that's a lie. So pride, in a lot of ways, is the hardest one to move through.
Yes.
Because we have our whole identity invested in a posture. And we do not want to see that we are not that posture. And usually we have developed that because we have found the way to be able to maintain it despite whatever else might be happening. So it's like its own little realm. It's a God realm. You're in charge of your God. reasonable. So there are these six realms, and you, what you do is you practice compassion for all of them. You can see the suffering of all of them. So when you meet these six things in the world, you practice identifying them. Have you got those six? Some of you know the Chan Rezin meditation. So that when you meet them, you actually identify them. Oh, this is, and this person is caught in that. They are in hell. They are in hungry ghosts. They are in animal. They are in human. And there is no way. I wish there was some way to relieve the suffering of all beings in all realms. Right? And what is the cause of this suffering? The cause of this suffering is the big I, ignorance. Due to ignorance, all beings are caught unaware, due to self-grasping, due to self-referencing, to believing that an I, an inherent, separate, permanent I, exists. And then you say, I wish to help myself and all beings be free of this ignorance. And then you think, may all sentient beings be free of this ignorance. So first you allow yourself to feel that it would be really nice to see all beings. And then you make it a statement, may all beings be free of self, of ignorance. And then you think, whatever there is, whatever power has been gathered by me throughout endless lifetimes, may it be used so that all beings be free from ignorance. So you see, each one of these is a step, you know, step, step. And you know that you don't have that power. But you know you have the power if you take all the wholesomeness from beginning of time to now that has, you know, supports you here and now. That at least you can have faith that there is Guru, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. Mm-hmm. There is some principle in the universe. However you want to call it. You image it like a light, you image it like a person, you image it like an icon. I don't care how you do it. And then you put that in front of you or above your head, it doesn't matter. And you pray, please, whatever you want to call it, help me to make it possible for all beings to be free of ignorance. You are the only hope for this to occur. Because we are not up to the magnitude of the pain that has been entrusted to us. We don't feel the pain. When we teach. So therefore, oh yeah, you're doing that, are you? Not a lot of fun, is it? I personally found it not very skillful, especially the third time. Would you like to try something else? Not in those words, but in fact, that's what I have to say to people who are crazy. You notice how if you're really crazy and you really don't admit you're crazy, that everybody else still thinks you're crazy. So in order to communicate to them, you might as well accept the fact that they think you're crazy and maybe even call yourself crazy and then see where you can make the communication go. Because I know that one. Not as deeply as some of the people I work with, but I certainly know it. Fortunately, I didn't have to go that far. So with you and you and you and you and you and me. When you are willing to go into the pain of your own self, not be hypnotized by it out there, and lose your boundaries,
and to be able to feel it, see the spaciousness, know what fear comes up in you, work with your own fear, and then work with spaciousness. Then you're going to open that door. That brings in the state of being that is called sympathetic joy and equanimity. Until you can do that, you're not going to taste them. Sympathetic joy is when you take all desire, all the manifestations around you, and it becomes the doorway to totality. Sympathetic joy is when you've turned the river around, where you're not going out trying to make yourself known in the world, but the whole world is the energy that flames you to awaken. Equanimity is knowing that that's all that's happening everywhere, all the time, anywhere. So your work is to see the six realms everywhere and practice compassion. Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Over time. That's the union rep.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? I don't think this is quite as much in a certain way. In another way, it's more. But you can see what I'm building on here, can you? And you can see how every step of it would take a lot of work. But at least you're getting a seeding of it, a taste of it, so that you know how they go, and maybe you will actually be interested enough to play with them throughout the next few months, that you might say, oh, I wonder what loving kindness would be like here. I think I'll put a pebble in my shoe. Oh, well, what would be compassion doing here? I wonder where the space is. No questions, answers, comments? Yes.
And this is only a brief question, even though I realize it could be vast, but you may mention that about the delusional type, that you could work with Chen Reisi. Did I hear that correctly?
No.
No, I didn't.
You can work with anything with your delusional type, because you'll turn it into a delusion anyway.
Right.
It's like wide open. It's like greed type. You shouldn't work with everything, anything. Hate type, you should work with beautiful things. And delusion type, it really doesn't matter.
In the Buddhist...
But what you have to find if your delusion type is somebody you trust.
Right.
Can you get them to hold up one corner of your delusion?
Yeah.
Every once in a while they wiggle. And just for a moment you let go of delusion and you're here. And then they... That's what they do. That Namjong Rinpoche tends to do that. Have you noticed that? That turkey. Or maybe he's a peacock, I'm not sure.
Many feathers.
Many feathers. Many feathers. Many feathers.
The man of many feathers.
Did that sort of answer your question?
Yeah, in an eclectic way, and in a way that would work, that I could work with, yes. But the part that it maybe didn't answer would be just from, I was just trying to remember that there were some antidotes that I had heard over time in terms of the practices I have done. And I just,
for delusion type, detail is really good. The more detail, the better. Because they love detail.
Agreed.
They'll occupy them with greed. Put a fly in their soup.
Right, so it's the bowl thing.
Yeah. Give them a sheet that has a seam right up the center when they spend the night, except for some types named Cecily and whose last name is Quiet. Other than that, you treat them like hate types. But all the other Greek types. You know the story. I'm just going to tell one story. You can go if you want to without me. Once this woman, she has twins, she's a Tibetan woman, she has twins. And
it's their birthday, they're 5 years old, and one's a green type, one's a hay type. She wants to get the perfect thing, so she visits the local llama. He's gone away, but another llama's there who's sort of learning to be a llama. And she says to him, I want to buy birthday presents for my 5-year-old twins this year that will really be useful to them. And he says, oh yes, very good. Well, for the green type, get them something ugly, or something repulsive, and for the hate type, get them something beautiful. But make the hate one lots of choices. Oh, good, she says. So she goes off, she buys presents, she brings them in. Her kids are coming down, and she's like, she's not in the room when they come, and they see their presents, and then she comes in the room, and the greed type is there, and there's this huge bag of shit, right? And he's going, I know there's a pony in here somewhere! And the hate type is surrounded by these absolutely beautifully wrapped, superb parcels, large and small, and some of them are like giving off little sounds, and some have a perfume. They're like exquisite. And so, so what's the trick? Yeah, I know you. I know you know that story. How many times have you heard it?
It's good every time.
I know there's a pony. Well, there wasn't a lid. That was the mother. She left the room.
So, if it were a delusional child, you give them a jigsaw puzzle?
No, sure. A large one, like 3,000 pieces. I think delusion types are the ones who like those puzzles that you put them together and then you focus your eyes a certain way and then you see the 3D picture, you know. Or the ones who like two-sided puzzles. I have a couple of friends who give me those kind of puzzles, and I would say that they definitely enjoy delusion there. Because I'm a greed type. I like to put it together. Love puzzles. I love to put them together. Okay, that's enough, eh? Blah, blah, blahs. Do you have any actual questions? Are you all clear about what you're doing? Tomorrow's really the last day, isn't it?
Tomorrow
the class
others
is coming. Them are coming. So they will be really, don't try not to respond to their jealousy, because they will see how we are all gleaming with this transcendent flush of joy. Try to be kind.
No, it's supposed to cool down, is it not?
I hope so.
Yes, 27.
No, 21. Notice this extremely beautiful, cool gold light in your hearts. And it spreads out through your body, pours out your pores in every direction, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. Goes to the universe, and wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, it's just temporarily assuaged, and you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, thank you for your compassion. Thank you so much.